A very good morning to you. It's Sally Ann Barrett here with you on Clare FM this Sunday, and welcome to Hindsight, where we look back at some of the biggest and some of the best stories of the week. Coming up on the show this morning, a trip to Milltown Malbay as the town gets a makeover. Enna's 2040 plan gets backing for €10 million loan, but not everyone is happy. And a morning focused listener highlights the difficulties facing some looking to get their vaccines. A very busy show indeed. We start, as I mentioned earlier, with a trip to Milltown Malbay. On Monday's Morning Focus, Alan Morrissey shone a spotlight on what's happening in the town as it looks to update the image of the area.
No matter where I wander, no matter where I stray, my heart lies in Milltown Malbay.
Hi Alan, my name is James O'Brien. I am Secretary of Milltown Malbay Community Enhancement Group, and on this particular project I'm Project Lead.
James, can you explain to us what's happening with, is it the main street in Milltown Malbay?
It is, I suppose. It's the entire architectural conservation area. That's where our project is based. The town itself, we felt, needed a big lift, needed to brighten up in colour, and we thought, you know, this would be ideal. Given the grant funding that we received, it would be an ideal project and an ideal way to get that and transfer it onto the landscape.
So can you tell us how this funding came about, how long ago, and when the wheels started in motion?
Yeah, so it was obviously the Town and Village Renewal Scheme. It was third round application and accelerated measure. Our group felt that, you know, we could have a shot. We had the capability and the skill set to disperse the funding and to carry out a project like this. So we were eager to do a bit and do a bit for the town, and that's basically how the funding came about. We decided then, obviously, the funding itself was, I suppose, specifically for painting and also street furniture. We were kind of limited in what we could do as regards street furniture and space. Most of the usable space was taken up, so we thought that, you know, that painting would be somewhere to concentrate on, and definitely, you know, we had a sizable project that we could achieve results with.
I would imagine there was near universal approval from the committee to go ahead with this venture and try and brighten up the centre of the town?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. I mean, you know, we felt the town needed it. There were quite a few buildings within the small conservation area that did need quite a bit of attention. And it was universal, as you say. It was a no-brainer, really, to go for it.
When did the work start? How long has it been going on to this point?
One cold, bright December afternoon, we took a walk in the town. We surveyed the entire area within the town, the core of the town itself, and we identified properties that, you know, that needed a good lift, good painting. We carried out that survey, as I say, and we assessed all those properties then on that basis and drew up a short list. On that basis then we carried out, I suppose, you know, homeowner consultation. Then there was quite a bit of work involved in it, logistics, you know, identifying the properties, identifying the owners, and in contacting them to see would they be interested in partaking. And luckily enough, you know, we received a hugely positive response from the homeowners. They've been brilliant, actually, this project, obviously, without their positive feedback, couldn't have taken place.
So in terms of places that are being done up, is it just homes? Is it a mixture of homes and businesses?
It is a mixture of homes and businesses, and, you know, I suppose, you know, be at home or busy at a business, if the building needed attention, we wanted to give it that attention. Those properties, I suppose, you know, as I say, there was also key properties for us within the town that always stood out. And in, you know, times in past, if you look at photographs maybe going back a century ago, certain buildings always stand out, and those strategic buildings, we wanted to give them a good facelift, because they're very prominent in fairness, and they have quite beautiful detail on them. We've a very small but dedicated, committed team. There's six of us on our committee. Each one of us is involved in this project. After that, then, look, we have contractors, all local contractors. I suppose that was one of the key objectives of the project, was to keep the funding local if possible and source the materials locally as well. So, luckily enough, we've four very good, competent contractors in town here who've partaken in the project and carry out the work. And then also Burke's Hardware, big mention for those as well. They've been brilliant in facilitating us and, you know, make sure all the materials are there and ready to go.
So at what stage is the work at now? What is the point at which it's finished?
So we had two murals, and the second one is almost complete, and the project, the painting itself, is probably about 80% complete, 80-85% complete. We're nearing completion now with that, so it's nearly there, thank God, almost over the line.
I'm Fiona White, member of the committee.
Just been talking there about the work that's going on, and it's such a positive knock-on effect for Milltown Malbay.
Hugely positive for Milltown Malbay, I think. You know, it gives a lift to the town, and which is what we wanted to do. Town enhancement was our focus, and we did that by painting the buildings, but also the murals, the four murals actually. We have two of them almost completed, a third one in progress, and we will have a fourth one. So they're in focal points coming in or exiting the town and within the town centre itself. One of the big murals there at the corner of Canada Cross is very significant because it depicts a historical event in Milltown Malbay, the Three Brave Blacksmiths, a Milltown song. And significantly enough, the location is just across the road from one of the forges, the three men, Maguire, Maloney and Heaney, the three blacksmiths at the time, in the song, mentioned in the song, and the forge still stands to this day. The other mural on the Steinman Road is, I suppose, recognising two traditional Irish music artists from Milltown Malbay, two well-known men who have since passed away. And they were well renowned for passing the tradition of Irish music down the generations. They encouraged and they nurtured young musicians like Therese McInerney, Idel Fox, Mairead Callanan, and it was only fitting to acknowledge them, and we thought by doing it on a mural it would I suppose welcome people into the town and show how welcoming the people of the town are.
That was Alan Morrissey on Monday's Morning Focus, speaking to locals looking to revamp Milltown Malbay. Coming up, Ennis 2040, why not everyone is happy. Welcome back to Hindsight here on Clare FM with myself, Sally-Anne Barrett. Well, on Tuesday, I was filling in for Alan Morrissey on presenting duties, and first up, a fiery debate on the decision by county councillors to grant a €10 million loan to the committee that will drive the Ennis 2040 plan to redevelop the county town. But not everyone believes it's a good plan. Councillors Claire Colleran-Malloy and PJ Kelly debated the issues involved. After a fiery debate, Clare County councillors have voted in favour of a controversial €10 million loan for a new public-private partnership that aims to provide a major development boost for Ennis. Ennis 2040 designated activity company will progress the project, which is of a similar model to the Limerick 2030 investment plan. Now, despite a final vote which saw 23 councillors in favour and 5 against, the approval for the €10 million loan was a contentious discussion at yesterday's County Council meeting. Well, for more on this now, I'm joined by Fianna Fáil Councillor in Ennis, Claire Colleran-Malloy. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Good morning.
Well, Claire, I think it's fair to say that it was a fiery debate and it was a contentious issue. You're a member of Ennis 2040 DAC. Can you tell us firstly what the thinking was from the Council Executive that they wanted to progress this project in this particular way?
Yes, I'd be glad to. The background here is that about 3 years ago, when I came in as the mayor for the Ennis Municipal District, I had a chat with Pat, and he was already thinking that we need to ensure that we have a strategic plan for going forward to avoid stagnation. So that was decided back in June 2018. And therefore, a strategic plan needed to be devised. That was laid out by Director Liam Keneally. 2 years later, the pandemic arrived. We would have been ready to launch this and start working on activities that are targeted within the plan a year ago. However, that was not possible. So now we as councillors, aware that a strategy was being devised, aware that a special company under the Companies Act was established, and that occurred back in late 2020. Obviously, an organizational structure needs to be put in place, and that is why there's a funding request for seed monies here. Now, granted, the approval was given yesterday by 23 councillors to approve a loan drawdown as needed to the tune of €10 million. But it must be understood that €10 million will not be drawn down in one tranche. It will be drawn down dependent on projects and developments that are approved by the DAC. Now, one thing I want to address also is this is not only forward-thinking to avoid Ennis being a stagnant town, but it's forward-thinking to ensure that our children and grandchildren, nephews, nieces going forward, can live and work in County Clare, in a vibrant county and a vibrant town. We must not forget that Ennis is the largest town in Munster, and the projection for its population growth going forward is that by 2040, we will have an additional 12,000 people living in the town and in Byron. Today we have something like 25,000. By 2040, it's envisaged that we will have 37,000. So this plan, with 5,000 additional jobs being projected, is to create an apparatus, a plan that will see this occur. And it's grounded on investment in our town, not just for employment, but for our lifestyle, our spatial areas.
But Claire, can I ask specifically, because a lot has been made of the number of jobs that can be brought mm-hmm. through this. Have we got any specifics? Where are these jobs going to be? What are they going to be in?
Well, we don't yet. Well, we do and we don't. We have a plan, you see, that is at the moment confidential. It was intended that the Taoiseach would come and launch this plan at the end of January. It is now intended that he will be coming fairly soon. A date has yet to be set.
Well, with respect, Councillor, do you feel it's fair to keep that report confidential with such a substantial loan involved?
Well, it's obviously the case that the plan itself is bulletproof. It's well thought out. There is no issue as to it being inappropriate. But clearly these are projections, and these are visionary plans with a necessary structure to be put in place to ensure that some of these sites are indeed developed going forward. But it isn't just about creating employment. It's about creating an environment in the town of Innes where people would want to live, which is climate adaptive and positive for our environment, and which has a structure so that people can walk and move within 10 minutes. So this is a visionary plan. Without a plan, there's very little likelihood that we will create the kind of jobs. And we mustn't forget that, you know, jobs in Innes, of the jobs that are occupied in Innes by Clare people, 50% of those people live outside of Innes. So this is good for the whole county. And moreover, if I might just add, we are learning from other counties who have adopted similar type structures to draw down substantial funding that's available at European level and under the national strategic funding apparatus. So why not learn from others? After all, when you compare the drawdown figures for County Clare at 8 million in recent years, and you compare that with our closest neighbour of Limerick, which has drawn down 125 million, obviously these funds are being well spent and creating the kind of vibrancy that's being addressed in our efforts here in Ennis with the Ennis 2040 plan.
Okay, right. Let's get another viewpoint on this, because as I said, there were 23 councillors in favour during the vote and 5 against. But there was a number of those 23 councillors who, when they were called to give their vote, said reluctantly yes, or were hesitating and were hopeful that this would pan out as planned. One of those who voted very clearly against this plan was Fianna Fáil councillor PJ Kelly in Lissy Casey. Good morning to you, PJ.
Good morning, Sally Ann. Good morning, Taylor. Good morning, everybody. How are you this morning?
Good. Well,
good morning. Good morning, PJ.
PJ, you were very exercised about this at the council meeting yesterday. Now, the CEO, Pat Dowling, said that this was an indictment, that this had not been brought into place earlier. And he said that Ennis was 10 years too late in the context of its full development. But you felt that this isn't doing enough for the rest of County Clare. You had looked for an amendment on this, that a similar plan would be brought forward for areas outside of Ennis, but that didn't get much sway yesterday.
That is correct. I want an amendment so we could cherish all the people of the county equally. I mean, our constitution guarantees equal rights. 1916 proclamation, equal rights. Our Christian values, equal rights. But unfortunately, we have a part of the county, rural areas, which are seriously deprived. And I had two, that was the first problem. The second problem was the structure of this company. I had asked questions at briefing meetings. I didn't get correct answers. I submitted 12 questions. They were answered in writing yesterday. They confirmed my suspicion. And whatever suspicion I had about it, and as things are dealt, I'm terribly shocked to hear my good friend Claire say this morning, they were confidential matters. In other words, did we approve something yesterday that we didn't know what was in the bag? This is absolutely frightening. It's absolutely frightening.
And you did say, Councillor, that not getting your amendment approved was one of the most disappointing moments in your life. Now, that's in the context of you've been a councillor for 47 years.
I think there were
quite a statement.
There. I am, number one, pro-rural. I put in what I consider to be a genuine amendment yesterday, and it would have solved the problem. It unfortunately was ruled out of order, to my amaze. I won't go into that now. That's a scale error for law error.
Okay.
But I was still concerned about the whole structure.
Okay.
I mean, the word hope is mentioned all over the thing. We hope future investors and investments will pay off the loan. We presume this will happen. We presume this. We presume that. And, of course, we know presumption is the mother of all cock-ups. The whole thing is nebulous. It was handled badly. First of all, it was withdrawn and processed for the May meeting. Panic broke out from their felt. It wouldn't get through. Meanwhile, a lot of mine management meetings took place. Everybody has a right to vote as they did. I'm not criming anybody for where they voted yesterday. It's a free country. But I'm generally worried that we don't have fair play. We could stop out making us a nicer place without spending much money. I'm speaking to a lot of people in West Clare who don't go to Innes anymore because of traffic problems there. They go into Sullivan Hansbury, they turn right. It's a nightmare to get down as far as the West County Hotel with the traffic bollards all over the place. The old age pensioners who intend to shop post office in Innes can't park in Bindon Street. There's flower pots and car parks all over the place. Innes has done an awful lot in recent years to strangle itself. There is no doubt about it. Now, I hope this thing works. It's a fait accompli, but I have extreme reservations about how nebulous the whole thing, how woolly it is, and the lack of clarity throughout it. The further point that worries me is, and it's down in black and white, those who run the show in that subsidiary organization or company, whatever you want to call it, I am not accountable to the people who lent the money.
Okay.
One of the questions I ask, do they provide collateral? The answer is no. If they buy a further money, will the council be liable? I didn't get an answer.
Okay, let's put that to Councillor Colleran Molloy. Let's put that to Councillor Colleran Molloy. Claire, I'd like to bring you back in here.
Yeah.
I mean, there was significant concerns spoken about at the meeting about oversight and how that's going to work and accountability for the spending of funds. Also, I remember Gerry Flynn mentioning as well about the allocation for salaries and such within within this. Those are real concerns when councillors are responsible to the public and to their voters for how these funds are drawn down.
I agree, and I'm going to address that, and don't let me not do so, but I want to first address what Councillor Kelly has said. When I refer to the document being confidential, obviously that is as per public defamation. All the councillors have been fully apprised of the document. They are fully aware of what is in the plan. So I want to address that firstly. Moreover, the executive team, the chief executive and the director both agree that they could have done better in terms of communication with councillors, and that is why the item was not addressed at the May meeting. Subsequent to the May meeting, however, full briefings were had of all of the councillors so that they were fully versed in what they were being asked to do. And I'm pleased to hear Councillor Kelly say that he hopes it works. I completely appreciate his concern, but now I want to refer back what you're asking. This is a vehicle, and it's not correct, as you're doing in the news, to call it a public-private endeavour. It, in fact, is a fully owned public entity. It is owned by the County Council as the sole shareholder. It is a vehicle that is perfectly permissible under the law to allow for a concentrated focus on attracting big funds from strategic investments, from European Investment Bank funds. It has been adopted by other county councils.
And yet, Claire, there seems to be only a limited number of councillors who were on the committee of this.
Well, there are, let me explain, there were initially only 8, 4 representing the public sector. Those would have been the Director of Finance, Nolene Fitzgerald, and the Director of Economic Development, Liam Keneally, and 2 councillors. Those were myself and Councillor Mark Nestor. Now, just before I move on to why that needed improvement, there then are 4 representatives on the board from the private sector, all of whom are giving of their time for free. And we know who they are. There's Kieran Constein representing the finance sector, AIB Financing,
for the three counties of Kerry, Limerick and Clare. You have Gerry Cahill, CEO, former CEO of Roche. You then have Brian Crowley, CEO and founder of TTM Healthcare. And finally, Linda Barron, CEO of Corporate Excellence Ireland. So going back to the board membership, there was definitely a flaw when we had unbalanced political representation with the councillors that were on there, Councillor Nestor and myself. So it was thought best that, and Councillor Nestor made this decision on his own behalf, that he would resign so that we could allow for better balance, so that now there will be added to the board Councillor Johnny Flynn and Councillor Anne North, the current Mayor of Innes Municipal District. So there is definitely more of a representation on the public side now than was initially thought necessary, and that has been addressed. And with respect to oversight, the Chief Executive is the ultimate administrative head of the County Council. He has to report to the councillors on a weekly, on a monthly basis. He is the individual who will be in full sight of all the activities of the DAC, and the board of the DAC must report to him. So that, I believe, should be appropriate governance and oversight. And then moreover, yes, you mentioned the administrative costs. At the moment, are as indicated in the answers to Councillor Kelly's questions, could range between 250 to 300,000 per annum. This is because chief operating officer of this company needs to be retained. That individual must have the skill set to take a project from brownfield or greenfield to blocks and mortar. They must have the skill set to devise the necessary plans and to attract the necessary funding. And those skill sets do cost, and deservedly so. So, you know, and I mean, my point is, if we don't look forward and grasp every opportunity and grasp known blueprints for success, well, we are going to stagnate. And I want to address one other thing with regard to what Councillor PJ Kelly is saying, where, yes, clearly, when schools are closing and post offices are closing in the West, that is very concerning. But when you look at the County Council and their borrowings to match funding that has gone into the west of our county in recent times, let me just have your listeners understand that in 2020 alone, the County Council borrowed $2.2 million to match fund the funding of the Vandeleur Gardens upgrade, the Ennis Diamond Hub, and the Loop Head. Moreover, additional borrowings will be required to ensure that we develop Holy Island, etc. And Innes councillors are fully supportive of that. And I could go on about other funding sources that have benefited the West, such as the leader funding. We could go on at length.
Okay.
But what I don't like is the idea that the council was divided evenly on this. The rural councillors, such as Councillor Pat Hayes comes to mind, Councillor Killian Murphy.
Yes, they gave an emphatic yes, they did.
They see the benefit of this blueprint as one that can be adopted going forward to develop economic opportunities in the rest of the county.
Okay, Claire, I want to give our listeners a chance to come in on this. 086-1800-964 or 1850-400-965. A couple of comments in already. PJ, in terms of what Claire mentioned there, you know, there have been other funding streams such as LEADER, such as CLOR. You know, you made a statement that you said that Rural Clare is dying, which is quite the claim considering the amount of funding that's been issued there in the past few years through these schemes. I mean, are you not satisfied that Ennis as the county town needs to be further developed as a flagship for attracting enterprises that would benefit the whole county?
I have no problem with that. I would love to see it developed, but I'd like to see everybody cherished equally. I mean, I'm totally disappointed with the structure of the what you call. We got a PAB briefing. We asked questions that weren't answered. I had to put in questions in writing. We were told about projects in Ennis. On one briefing, we were told there'd be a building going up in the post office field and possibly a car park under it. And possibly, I mean, I just imagine the white elephant in the market would be delighted if he looked across the river and saw a potential partner at the other side. I don't believe it was a practical place to put a building. A lot of the other projects that were mentioned, they were nebulous. They were pie in the sky. They had no substance. None whatsoever. And I mean, where those outfits have been successful in different parts of the county, whether it's in Mayo or elsewhere, one important element is absent in Clare that was present there. There were ministers. There were political heavyweights there. It is quite a difference to what we have here in Clare. As COVID comes to an end, rural Clare is closing down. Four schools closed in West Clare in a short length of time. There are three more at risk. Businesses are closing down because of COVID. West Clare needs a break. I'm not looking for preferential treatment for rural Clare. I'm just asking for equal benefit, equal rights, and no putting on a gloss or a pretense that all is well and that we're the saviour generals of the county.
Well, then, on that note, PJ, isn't the avenue open to you and councillors who think in the same vein to maybe go and put together a similar proposal for the rural areas of the county that could be set up in a similar way?
Well, that's what I proposed yesterday. We were starting down.
But can you go back to the council with this proposal and garner support?
I certainly will go back. I was not a bit of experience in rural development. There's a different process in development in rural areas. Rural people help themselves if they get a small little bit of help. They love a challenge. They don't want all the cookies on the table at the same time. I go back to the time we had the great Joe Boland with his schemes. He did so much for Clare. We had one GA field in the late 70s in Clare. Before he finished, there was one in every parish, two in some. He was followed up by Willie Maloney. And I know the present CEO, once the kitchen gets hot, he's going to come along. He's going to deliver. As a Limerick man, I don't believe he'd like to be caught in second place.
That was councillors Claire Colleran Malloy and PJ Kelly discussing the funding row over NS 2040. Coming up after this break, a Morning Focus listener highlights the issue of accessing your nearest vaccination centre. Welcome back to the final part of this morning's Hindsight with myself, Sally-Anne Barrett. On Friday's Morning Focus, Alan Morrissey was joined by listener Pat Doyle, who highlighted the issues that he feels some people are experiencing when trying to get their vaccines at their nearest vaccination centre.
I registered whenever I could register. In two days I got a text to go to the Radisson. I thought the West County is only, I'm only 15 minutes out the road from the West County, like.
Yeah.
And I rang up the number for, and I said, it's just pointless sending me to the Radisson. Why not go to the West County? And he said, your man said he would change that for me. And lo and behold, in 2 days after, I got a text to go to the Radisson. So I said that I was only wasted time ringing that number again. So I went to the Radisson, and I must say the Radisson was very convenient now, and the staff and the vaccinators and the stewards and everything was all very helpful and courteous, like. But could have been a lot handier to go to the West County, like.
And just to clarify, when you received notification, you asked them, could you go to the West County for your first vaccination dose?
I did.
And you say you were told that they would change that?
And a guy told me he would change it for me, and he took down my air code. The next thing I got the second notification to go to the Radisson. So I said, to get into the system, I was anxious to get the vaccination. And so I said there was no point when I had tried once. I said there was no point in trying it again. Like,
not to put an age on you, but you fall within the 60 to 69 age cohort.
Yeah.
You weren't too discommoded going to the Radisson, which I suppose technically is in Clare.
There was people inside from Flagmount, Whitegate. I was in with a fella here beside me, and he was from every field. All Limerick City and all that had gone out to the Radisson. Like, could you imagine it would have made more sense to take us to the West County, like, this year? We have to go. We'll have to go to the race course now with the second jab, I would like to say. That's all right. I'm able to do that, like to say. But there's a lot of people that, whether you either go the motorway or you go the old. Now the motorway is closed from Buck Hill to clinic, someplace else, the next junction. And if you're going to go through the city centre, O'Connell Street is closed up to one lane in parts of it.
Yeah, they're doing works there.
I'm able to do all that. But if there's a lot of people that don't like motorways, and they're not used to driving on motorways, and they're not used to driving through the city and all this stuff thing, and to put them to an inconvenience, like, to them. When there's a vaccination centre beside you, kind of, could make more sense. Like, but to me, you wonder how accurate the air codes are. I got someone, I'm not into computers now, but I got someone to Google my AF code yesterday evening, and they told me the AF code was showed up in Limerick in one place and Tristan Clare in another place. Like.
And Pat, do you mind if I ask where you're located?
I'm located here outside Tulla, halfway between Tulla and Madike. That's called Bell and Hinge.
Okay, so I don't know how that could be confused for Limerick.
Yeah, no, I don't know now, but that's the way, that's what happened anyway. I gave them the AF code, they said they... When we were told about to register, they were told to have your PPS number and your air code in front, which you like.
Yes.
Register that you'll be sent to the nearest one to your like.
And you mentioned when you went to the Radisson for your first dose that there were other people from further afield in Clare who were there as well. What was the general sense amongst them? Were they a little confused as to why they'd go to the Radisson? Or and just to point out again, the West County was open at this stage.
It was open. It was open a week before that, because I even saw a picture on the Clare Champion the week before about the first man getting his jab in the West County. Like anyone that I've spoken to now, they're all cribbing about having to go to the race course now to put in a good bit of extra journey onto it. Like, and the important thing is to get the vaccine. Like, for
of course, yeah,
yeah, and we get over the other, which is, it's just an inconvenience. Like, and tis, especially when there is a center vaccination center in the county. And the question I'd like to ask about is about the air code, how accurate they are. Like.
So there you go. That's Morning Focus listener Pat Doyle's story about getting the vaccine. He was sent to the Radisson and then subsequently the racecourse in Patrickswell for the second dose rather than the centre in Ennis. What has your own experience been like? Were you sent down to Limerick for the vaccine or maybe somewhere else that wasn't in Clare? Did you give them your air code but that didn't matter, you were living far closer to Ennis? Maybe you texted them when you got an initial appointment, you replied no and waited quite a while to receive an alternative, a rescheduled appointment. Do let us know, what has your experience been in terms of getting your vaccine and what centre you got it at and how much did it discommode you? Maybe you didn't have a car or any sort of transport and it created issues for you. Do get in touch. You can call 1850 400 964 or you can text or WhatsApp us. That number again is 086 1800 964. And we are joined now for more on this by Councillor Pat Burke, who's in White Gate. He's also a member of the HSE's Regional Health Forum West. And Pat has a similar story to tell and he joins me now. Pat, good morning to you. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Alan.
You got your second dose on Wednesday, but I hear, Pat, not in the centre that's closest to you.
Well, no. Obviously, the West County and the centre of County Clare would be a lot more convenient to most people. But where I'm coming from, I suppose Limerick and Innes are nearly the same distance, but granted the race course then is a bit out of the way. But most of my area along by the lake around to Scariff, Ogunnell, Killaloe, to the best of my knowledge, all have air codes that bring them to Limerick. So it's something to do with the old postal system to the best of my knowledge. Now it was interesting to hear Pat Dial there in Ballinahinch. That's why I just wonder where the boundary is, if you like, for the air codes that takes you then to either Innes or Limerick. So when I got the first one to go to the Radisson, that was fine. I suppose it's not too far away to tip down there.
Yeah.
And then when I got the second one for Patrickswell, while it was a little bit out of the way, it was no major inconvenience either. It's great to get the vaccine, I suppose. You know, when we go back to this time last year, I remember speaking to a neighbour of mine, a healthcare professional, and she said to me, we won't get over this COVID until we're all vaccinated. So it couldn't come quick enough, I suppose. And, you know, I presume most of West Clare and North Clare and that, I presume all those people are going to the West County as opposed to Limerick. That would be a major inconvenience for them. But when you're out here in East Clare, Limerick and Innes are there's not much in the difference, really, albeit the race course is a little bit further out.
Yeah, I suppose, Pat, I'm a little similar to yourself. I'm pretty close to Limerick City on the Clare side of it, living in Clonlara, and my appointment was for the racecourse in Patrickswell. And again, similar-ish distance between there and Ennis for me, so not a huge inconvenience, and I did have my own transport, which helped as well. And I did say the other day in the show that when I was out there getting my jab, that I did see a double-decker bus.
Right.
So obviously that's bringing people in. I'm not sure what route it takes or what places it goes to. But I suppose, look, you know, the HSC might emphasise the fact that the move from the Radisson to the racecourse actually increased the number of vaccination boots. I think it was in around 30, 32 boots were available in the Radisson Blue, and it increased to 44. So that's a positive. You can vaccinate more people.
It is. I think 46 even boots in the racecourse. And I couldn't get over when I arrived at the racecourse the other day and saw the queue of cars going in, first of all, and then the queue of people formed in a circle right around the back of the facility there. And I said, gosh, I'm going to be here for a while. But I couldn't believe how I had no sooner got out of the car and the queue had disappeared, you know. So the rate they're getting through people, vaccinating people, is incredible, really. And I suppose it's down to the HSC, it's down to the whole health system, if you like. While it comes in, the HSC come in for plenty of criticism. Here in my own area, I have to compliment the Scariff Medical Centre and all the team there that back in February when they started vaccinating the older people in the community. They started, I think, with the over 90s all the way down to the over 70s and vaccinated an enormous amount of people who just had to go into Scariff from the local area. So that was a huge service, and then of course I didn't qualify for the over 70s, Alan, so I had to wait my turn. So when I registered first, as I said, yes, the Radisson. So no big deal to tip down to the Radisson. Going to the race course is a little bit out of the way. But look, at the day was fine, the sun was shining, people were in good form. And I must say, there's a great view from the waiting room when you sit for the 15 minutes up in the Limerick race course. You're looking out at the countryside in County Limerick. No disrespect to the West County now, but the view from the race course in Limerick. And people were in great form, delighted to be getting their vaccines. You know, we met a person down at the bottom of the steps, and whether you depended on which vaccine you were getting then, you were sent left or right. So I was getting the Moderna, second Moderna shot, and up the stairs there. And as I said, everybody, and the rate that we're getting through people is incredible, really. It's a credit to them.
I'd agree with you on the view out there, Pat. It is pretty nice. And did you meet anyone else from Clare there who perhaps was a bit discommoded at having to go down to Patrickswell?
I saw a neighbour of mine in the queue, and no issue there, you know what I mean? Some people are self-employed, of course, and are a bit more flexible. I'm not sure in work situation now, to be honest with you, are people given the day off or given a few hours off? I think people would need a few hours off maybe after getting the vaccination. So whether that's discommoding people or not, there were so many people there. They can't all be farmers or self-employed people. So I suppose that's a question, you know, that I haven't an answer for. The people who are in work, who are in office jobs and all of that, have they got days off to take get their vaccine? If they have, well then that's great, so they can leave on time to get there on time and they're in no rush home or whatever. Now I'm not sure, but maybe you'll be able to find that out. And if that's the case, well then it's not really discommoding anybody. And I think there's nobody out there that doesn't have a family member or a neighbour at this stage to provide transport, you know, somebody who doesn't drive themselves. You know, I meet a lot of people every day, everybody has somebody, I think, at this stage. I think that's fair to say, barring extreme situation.
I still, though, Pat, I mean, they were providing a bus service out to Patrickswell, so clearly the need for a double-decker bus, it was warranted that there are people for whom receiving transport from someone else either isn't an option, or at the time of day that they're getting their vaccine, that person isn't available to bring them. I mean, my vaccine was at 8:30 in the morning. If I didn't have a car, that clashes with, you know, a relative or friend of mine who has to go to work and can't drop me out.
That's a fair point. My appointment was at 1:30, so it was midday, so the traffic outside of Limerick on the motorway and that was easy. It was easy to get there. But I do take your point that 8:30 in the morning is, if you had to ask somebody to drive you, it is an inconvenience. I presume the double-decker bus, which I saw there myself, dropping off people, is coming out from the city centre. If people had other business in Limerick, or if they were living I'm not sure of the route, as you said yourself, but I presume it was out from the city centre in Limerick, dropping people off there and doing the shuttle bus service back in and out. It seemed to be quite busy.
Well, Pat, I have to say, we are getting plenty of reaction to this on Morning Focus. Just to go through some of them here. Mary in Ennis says, good morning, I'm living near the West County. I went to the Radisson and next Monday I'm going to the race course. I rang and asked to be changed. The lady said, no, can't change the place, only the date and time. This is so ridiculous. I know Pat Doyle did say when he got in touch with them to ask, could it be changed to the location? He was told it could be, but ultimately it wasn't. Yes. Joe in Ennis is he's kind of disagreeing with Pat Doyle. He says that man should be glad to have got it, not to be whinging about it. Well, to be fair to Pat Doyle, he wasn't whinging. You know, he was just, you know, he was saying it wasn't a huge.
He was making
the point that it could be problematic for others who don't have transport.
Now, that woman living close to the West County, that baffles me, because as I said, I don't know where the boundary falls for the Limerick postcodes. Like, we've got post at our house for years and it's Whitegate via Limerick or via Limerick, you know, so my corner of East Clare, right across to yourself, Alan in Clonlara, you know, around by the southeast Clare, all the way over to Whitegate, including Scariff and maybe up as far as Feakel. But then, like Ballinahinch, where Pat Dial is, I'm not sure. The boundary must be there. But your listener from the living close to the West County, well, that baffles me why they ever went to the Radisson in the first place.
We're getting callers
from West Clare. Are all the West Clare people, are there any of them having to go to the race course? I presume not.
Well, we've more in on this, Pat. I'll just run them by to see what you make of them as well. Trish has been in touch. I shouldn't be laughing, but I am anyway. On 086 1800 964, she says, we are a married couple. I was sent to the West County. My husband sent to the race course. Trish, look, wherever you can get a break from your significant other, it's always very much welcome. I hope my significant other isn't listening at the moment. One here from John says, Morning Focus, that man Pat is correct. Clare people should be sent to the West County. This is more Father Ted HSE farce. One would imagine that common sense would prevail, that especially at this time when the virus is at its worst and out of control in Limerick, why inconvenience Clare people, but more importantly put Clare people at risk of picking up the virus? And Mary in East Clare says, good morning, from the initial introduction of air codes, East Clare was in Limerick, hence my refusal to use same and advised officialdom at the time, got no response, and now for the greater good and my safety I've no option but to use it. Pat Burke, I'll just mention that we did get in touch with HSE. They've sent us a response. So it says, in registering for the vaccination, an air code is requested in order to provide an appointment at the vaccination centre closest to you. If the time or location of the appointment on the text notification doesn't suit, members of the public can decline the appointment by text and are encouraged to contact the National Helpline on 1850 24 1850 with any query, and a new appointment will then be offered. On occasion, members of the public may be offered an appointment in a centre other than the one closest to them. It can depend on a few reasons: clinical reason, the cohort group concerned, and supply of vaccine in the region at a given time. The HSE statement goes on to say that generally they encourage members of the public to attend for vaccination as soon as possible where this is inconvenient, or where this is convenient rather. We've been very pleased with the uptake in County Clare and across the region to date. And I suppose, you know, they'll also be highlighting, the government says over 300,000 people currently being vaccinated every week, 3.5 million doses issued of the vaccine, and 31% of the adult population fully vaccinated as well. So they'd be accentuating the positives in that regard.
Yes, Osher, they will do that, of course, but I haven't met, you know, it's not until this week that the issue has been highlighted, and maybe it's because of the move from the Radisson to the race course that has stirred this debate, if you like. But the husband and wife situation there doesn't make sense if they're living in the one house. And
it's
the
an
one
unusual
air.
One, yeah.
That's an unusual one. Your other contributor there that said everybody in County Clare should be going to the West County. Well, that's not necessarily the case. The people living in Cratlow, I'm sure, were delighted to pop down the road to the Radisson. People in Clonlara have no huge issue with going out to the race course. So that doesn't, you know, County Clare is a big county. It's a long way from Ballyvaughan.
Yeah, Pat, and that is fair enough. And as I was saying, you know, I'm down that neck of the woods, and either or was equally as satisfactory to me. But we have had a WhatsApp message in that says, all of O'Callaghan's Mills and Tulla area have got appointments for Limerick. This was despite being told we would be brought to the closest vaccination centre. I don't agree with Pat Burke, I'm afraid.
Yes, I don't agree with that fact either now, because that's where I wasn't sure. I knew that Feakel, north of Scariff in the Feakel area, had the Limerick air codes. They were going to Limerick, but that's what I was questioning, that O'Callaghan's Mills, Tulla area. Now, that doesn't make sense at all. that if you're in the parish of Tulla, for example, that you're asked to go to the Limerick race course. There is no logic in that. Whatever about, as I said, Whitegate, Scariff, O'Gunnelough, Killaloe, O'Brien's Bridge, Clonlara, that's a different scenario. We have the Limerick air codes for whatever reason. I remember at the time there was a bit of controversy about that and people weren't happy. Yeah. But you look at the air code system, is a great system in my opinion. When I'm, you know, having to meet people or whatever and they drop me their air code in rural areas and that, it's a great job, like. So it's a pity. It's a pity that a woman earlier on there said she lived beside the West County, has to go to the race course. Now there are people in the Mills and Tulla. So I'm not sure now how we get to the bottom of this, Alan. That is unfortunate.
Well, Pat, perhaps the HSE is looking out for marriages and relationships, and they're giving each half of the relationship a little bit of a breather and a time out. Because we've had another one in saying, my parents, this is on WhatsApp, by the way, my parents live in Shannon. One was sent to the West County and the other to the race course. They asked to be changed and they said they would. However, a few hours later, a text came through with a new date, but the same venue. Another unusual one there.
Crazy. The one air code sending people in different directions. Now, there's some breakdown there, obviously, in their system.
That was listener Pat Doyle and Whitegate councillor Pat Burke on the issue of accessing your nearest vaccination centre. Well, that's nearly all the time I have left on this morning's edition of Hindsight. Rebecca O'Sullivan will be back with you next week. But from me, Sally Ann Barrett, enjoy, stay safe, and I'll talk to you very soon.